This is the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. All right, welcome to another episode of the Two Bald Nerds Podcast. I'm one of the two bald nerds. I'm Mark Stucheski, host of the Mark Stucheski Podcast. I live in Houston, Texas with my beloved wife, Michelle. My co-host in crime, my co-partner in crime, actually not co-partner, it would just be partner in crime. Mark, it's late. Forgive me. Who might you be, young man?
I might be Daniel Bourne, living up in good old Rochester, New York, where it's been fairly warm. Usually we're cold most of the year, but we've had a pretty decent summer. So
I'm impressed. You grabbed it this week.
I did.
I'm so impressed. Well, on this episode, we got to explain this. This is going to borderline facts with, it's going to sound partly conspiratorial. We're trying to give you some interesting topics. You already know what the topic is because you looked at the show title. But I want to make sure that you understand that we're not the experts. We're just two nerds talking about this stuff. And I will tell you, as I shared with Danny when I came up with this idea, I was actually in church and this idea popped in my head. I have no idea why, but I've always wondered what would happen if an EMP exploded over the United States or over your country if you're listening outside the U.S. Because we live in a very fragile world, don't we, Danny?
We certainly do. With all of our electronics and all of our connectivity and everything that's going on, everything that's run by electricity and electric grids and things of that nature, the sheer fact that any of that stuff could be disrupted, and we don't ever think about it, right? We just kind of go along our daily routines and live our lives and enjoy all of the fruits of all of these great things and never really stop to consider, well, what would happen? What would really happen if any of that stuff was interrupted on a large scale?
Yeah. And so the show today is all about EMPs. Now, you may be saying, what is an EMP? Well, it's an electromagnetic pulse, EMP. It's also a transient electromagnetic disturbance. I can't even remember writing TED. It's a brief, that's a key word, burst of electromagnetic energy. Now, EMP weapons are designed to deliver the damaging effects of a high-energy EMP that will disrupt unprotected infrastructure in the country. Thus, the employment of an EMP weapon against the country is the scenario of war most likely to collapse the functionality of the electrical network of the country. Now, I read that, obviously. I didn't have that off the top of my head. So what would be taken out in an EMP attack? Not a lot, just the power grid, laptops, tablets, cell phone towers, internet routers, electric gun safes, TVs, radios, refrigerators, and freezers, thermostats, of course, there'll be no power, electronic banking and all credit card and debit card and ATMs, the computerized components of vehicles, pacemakers, hospitals, diagnostic machines, and anything else with a microchip. So, Danny, that's a very short list.
Yeah, it's very interesting. This list is slightly different than some of the stuff that I came up with when I was doing some research. So when I was doing some research on the super uber nerdy stuff of how EMPs work, the pulse that destroys electronics works on the principle of the longer the wires are in a device, the worse the damage is.
Really?
In essence, yes. Because it's kind of like this, how would you explain it? Elongated blast effect. So when it hits, it sends out these shock waves. And in general, from what I gather, what it is the electromagnetic pulse is actually creating a disturbance in the electromagnetic field in the earth, which does a whole bunch. I won't get into too gory details, but it knocking electrons free as these waves go penetrating through the atmosphere. And a couple of the things that I read, one of the things that they made note of, and again, these are some of them are government sources. One of them was a NASA source, was that cars, although people think that cars might be really affected, because cars are predominantly already shielded inside of a metal container, they will most likely, unless it's a super strong EMP and you're close enough to the blast radius of it, a lot of the components inside of a car may actually continue to operate. because they're inside the car and the car is already shielded inside of a metal box, which would be a Faraday cage. So it's going to dissipate a lot of that electrical interference, if you will, before it even gets to any of the major components. Again, a lot of this stuff is probably untested, or if it is tested, they're not going to tell you what's going on. Cell phones and smaller electronics are less likely to be disturbed. The key to a lot of this is that that's only going to work if it's not powered on and it's not plugged in. So there's a lot of these smaller devices that may actually survive an EMP if they're out, but they're not connected to a power source. So like if your phone is off, but whoever has their phone off, your laptop's powered down, again, whoever has that happen, just something to take note of. But this list is a very long list, and the ones that scare me the most are power grid. That's the one that scares me the most, because if you think about it, if your power grid goes out, your house goes out. The other thing that will be affected by any of these is if you have some sort of a electrical generator that has computer components in it. I'm sorry, your generator is probably fried too. So you may have a whole house generator that runs on natural gas, but if there's components in there that are electrical in nature that run all of that, then you're probably SOL on that too once the EMP hits.
Yeah, and what's interesting is I read, not in this research, but I've read other times, that the best place, air quotes here, the best place, and of course depends on the size of the bomb, that if it was over the central United States, it would have a bigger landmass area affected, but most of the big cities are on the coast. So I got to believe if there is ever an EMP attack on the United States, which I got to believe our military is awesome, never happened, they would go on the East Coast. Sorry about you, Danny, over there where New York City is, or over in L.A. in San Francisco. I believe they would hit those two coasts. Number one, it's going to be easier to hit those cities, those coasts, much easier than it is in central United States, because less people live in central U.S. So why would you take the time to launch an EMP over the entire, half United States to set it off? Now, I don't know. I'm sure they come, like, there's different, like, atom bombs and, tonnage of the bombs. And I'm not an explosive expert, but I got to believe that you can create an EMP that's strong enough that could affect from coast to coast and from the Canadian border, or even beyond the Canadian border and south into Mexico. Did you do any research on that?
I did. So there are certain groups. China's one of them. Russia is one of them that are working on. And the U.S. says that they're not, but anytime the U.S. says that they're not, they probably are. Mm. The U.S. loves to play its stuff close to the hip. Mm. We've always been the type of country. Other countries will go out and flaunt their power. The U.S. kind of just likes to just go along and say, we're not worried, or, we're not really dealing
until they need it.
Until they need it, and then they bring out something that's three times bigger, and everybody's like, WTF! So there is that. But I did find one article, and again, this is a Wikipedia article, but the source of that article is actually a scientist who deals with this kind of stuff. And in this article, he talks about a pulse can easily span continent-sized areas, and this radiation can affect systems on land, sea, and air. So it doesn't really matter, right? It doesn't matter where it goes. A large device detonated at about 250 to 312 miles, or 400 to 500 kilometers, over, say, Kansas, would affect all of the continental United States.
Oh, wow.
The signal from such an event extends to the visible horizon as seen from the burst point. So it only works on the visible horizon. So you have to detonate it high enough that the energy goes through the horizon and doesn't hit mountains. But if that's the case, you basically can wipe out anything in that range.
Wow.
And then it'll go out and down. So it kind of goes, spreads out and down, kind of like a, not really like a mushroom, but it's more like a U, I think, is what I remember reading.
But it actually go into Canada, obviously, because that's the horizon, not just the coast and over to Mexico. Yeah. Very interesting. So let me ask you this question. What would life look like? Let's say one of our enemies was able to explode an EMP over the dead center of the United States. And it went from horizon to horizon, both north, south, east, and west. What would life look like in this country and the affected areas of Canada and Mexico?
So worst case scenario, as you're saying, power grid goes out. Power grid is what feeds all of your power. That's going to be the biggest problem because now you've got, nobody's got power. Power grid goes out, generators go out. You've basically eliminated the ability to use electricity. So think about that statement. One day you're humming along, doing your thing, and then the next thing, it goes dark and nothing is working. And even if your devices in the house could continue to function, the power grid is now out. So right. Even if your cell phone worked, chances are cell phone towers are gone because, again, right. They're large objects. Again, if these people were smart enough, they wouldn't just be detonating one of these low. They'd probably be detonating one higher in the atmosphere, which would hit satellites. Once you take out satellites and you take out the power grid, doesn't matter if your cell phone works or not. Doesn't really matter if your car gets from point A to B. If you go to a gas station and the gas station's power is out, guess who's not getting any gas?
Right.
So there's a ripple effect to that. It becomes a very scary thought. I don't know if anybody's ever, I've watched portions of this show, but there's a show, big show on TV called The Walking Dead.
Oh, I love The Walking Dead.
Think The Walking Dead, but without zombies. Like,
or maybe nothing. There will be zombies.
Oh, maybe there will Democrats. Be zombies. I don't know. Nice.
But we just lost a whole bunch of our audience.
Yeah, right, there we go. Sorry, folks. We still love you. But think that kind of scenario, right? Think a scenario where nothing now works. Everything is reset. There's no power. There's no ability to manufacture electricity on a mass scale. What are you going to do? Now, this is something that I came up with just earlier, and I actually, on WhatsApp, I hit my cousin Mark up with this. Think Amish, but if you haven't planned for it, you're not going to, it's not like you're going to instantly turn into an Amish person, right? But right. The Amish have been existing without electricity this entire time, and they've got sustained communities and all that, but our lives would be like that, only we'd be in such turmoil. It would be horrifying to us. I think the only people that would not even know what happened would be the Amish, to be honest with you.
And I, you know, not to make this political, but I think all the people who are in favor of the Green New Deal would be ecstatic because there would be literally no emissions.
Yes. I got to believe that there are probably some people that are already somewhat prepared for this.
Mm-hmm.
Call them preppers, call them survivalists, whatever you want to call them. There are groups of people that plan for this. And they plan for this by doing a series of different things, which we're going to talk about. But if you just kind of, it takes a minute to wrap your brain around, what would you do or how would you feel if all of a sudden you had no, think about the last time your power went out at your house. Mark, you've been in Houston a long time. You've lived through the hurricanes down there. I'm sure at some point you've been without power.
Oh, yeah.
So my dad lives in Florida and he's been without power for 2 days, 3 days, 4 days, 5 days. Mm-hmm. Again, generators help, but at one point he didn't have a generator and he had to go somewhere else at one point to be in a place where they had electricity. But imagine being in that moment where you have no electricity and realize there is nowhere else to go that has electricity. Like, this is it. This is no electricity and there's no electricity anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pretty scary thing. I've been very lucky living up here. The last time that we had anything like that up here that affected power on that kind of a scale had nothing to do with EMPs. It was the ice storm of 1992. We had a massive ice storm up here.
I remember that. I lived up there then.
You were up here at that point. And it took out a lot of people's power. We lost power, not for a long time. We lost power for maybe about a day. But, it, you know, as a kid, I was, you know, you're unnerved a little bit about it. After power came back on, you know, schools were closed for 2 weeks because there was a lot of cleanup that happened and all that. Mm-hmm. But just think about the implications of having no power. Think about the implications of if it did affect vehicles. maybe not all of the vehicles would be affected, but maybe some vehicles would be affected. So now you've got vehicles that just aren't in the middle of driving and now they're not working. Well, that's going to cause auto accidents.
Well, here's a way for the listener to think about it. If you ever watched Back to the Future, think about when they went back to 1885. Okay. 1885. There are no electronics. There is no electricity in people's homes. And could we survive? Technically, we could. But we human beings have become so dependent on our phones, on DoorDash, on Uber Eats, on Amazon Fresh, on deliveries, on getting our stuff from the internet or from the news. We've become so addicted, and very few of us get out and exercise anymore. Very few of us are in shape. When you tell someone, hey, have you grown a garden? Like, what, grow my own food? And so we technically could survive because humans have done it in the past. The problem is we become very complacent. And tell me if you agree with this or not, but we become complacent saying, hey, that'll never happen. Mark and Danny are just crazy. Well, you know what? We never thought Pearl Harbor, that's a smaller scale, never thought Pearl Harbor would happen. We never thought World War I or World War II would happen. We never thought in September 11th that would happen. So we always think, oh, it's never going to happen. I'm never going to die until I'm like 500 years old. But you don't know. And the reason why I decided to do the show on EMPs is because there's something else going on that is affecting us right now, which is affecting what they think is affecting all these tectonic plates moving around the Earth's core. And that's called sun flares. Because sun flares now are extremely active, and there's a ginormous one that just left the sun. Now, by the time you hear this episode, it already will hit the country or hit the planet. It takes about 2 days. And whatever side is facing the sun flare, that's where the problems are. And I know I sent you some links where there's a lot of earthquakes that are happening on the tectonic plates, and they think that they can tell that when the flares hit, that's when these earthquakes are happening. So that is also causing power issues. And one of these flares wipes out a satellite. I mean, and you depend on that satellite for your cell phone. So it's not just the EMP. It could be the good old sun that causes havoc as well.
That is true. The thing with the solar flares is, thank God, these solar flares seem to happen in cycles of 11 years.
Mm-hmm.
We are now in the high output of an 11-year cycle. They have been fairly consistent over the last so many cycles that they've been able to measure. So the output of the sun in terms of the solar flares themselves, although it spikes every 11 years, it hasn't gotten worse. They're just starting to see now that it is causing these effects on the plates. And a lot of that has to do with these solar flares are releasing massive amounts of concentrated electromagnetic energy. And mm-hmm. that's, again, messing with the magnetic field of the Earth,
yep.
which is making these tectonic plates move. It's kind of like punching your fist into water.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You're going to make things move. Probably more like mud than water because, you know, water would be a lot more. You'd have a lot more earthquakes, I think, with the water analogy, but you get the point.
Yeah.
Either way, we've gotten to the point now where technology can actually help us measure this stuff better. From the reading that I've been able to do, the sun would have to really get angry and really put out some massive solar flares to inflict the kind of damage that would happen if it was a directed weapon attack.
Right.
Right.
Which brings me back to another question I want to talk about. How worried should we be? I mean, China is their saber rattling with Taiwan. We have the Russian-Ukraine thing. I think we have a weak government here in the United States. How worried should we be? I mean, I think our military is the best in the world. I mean, in your personal opinion, how worried should we be about an EMP attack? I don't think it's that high. I think our military is that good. I think any bomb that was trying to shot over the United States, a missile, whatever, would be destroyed before it causes any damage. Do you agree with that?
I actually do believe that. There are several reasons I believe that. I believe that there is a case to be observant. I don't ever want to tell anybody to like start freaking out and get worried, because that doesn't help anybody.
Exactly.
But be observant and pay attention. And Mark and I are certainly not on the bandwagons where you should start plugging in and watching the news all the time to figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
Because we don't do that. We've bailed on the news. I mean, mm-hmm. him and I used to both be pretty good news junkies, and we have done a 180 on that and said, you know what? A little bit here, a little bit there, just enough to keep informed, and the rest of it can just stay right where it is.
I always say stay informed, not obsessed. So know what's going on, but don't watch the news. I mean, there's news sources. You can get a news 5-10 minutes. You know everything you need to know, because let's be honest, they just repeat the same things over and over again. And most of it's opinion. I don't want opinion. I want the news.
Yep. No, I agree. So much of the, you know, mainstream media today has become opinion and not real actual news or journalism. It's crazy.
Exactly. Now, okay, so we both agree that the chances of an EMP attack are low, but what can people do to prepare? You already talked about the Amish, which I think they'd come out and be kings and queens of the country at that point. But what are some other things that we can do just to keep in the whole point of this podcast episode, listener, is just to get you thinking. We try to come up with topics to get you to think. So, Danny, what are 3 or 4 ways that you found that we can begin to at least think about if something like this should happen?
Yeah, so there's a few different things. First of all, is if you're in the position to do it, you can always start buying canned goods, like canned goods, rice, wheat, because you can go to certain stores and buy just wheat so that you can actually make your own bread, that kind of stuff. And stock up on things that you know are going to last a while, food-wise. That way, something happens. And before I get too far into this, a caveat on some of these is that these are actually pretty practical for anybody who's in an area where a power outage for any reason for an extended period of time could happen. Mm-hmm. Hurricane zones, tornado zones, blizzard zones, whatever. It doesn't have to be a massive EMP that wipes out, you know,
exactly
the whole power grid. I mean, these are practical things that you could do just to be prepared, right? So again, stock up on some food items. You don't have to go crazy. You can start buying a couple extra cans of green beans or corn or whatever a week. Just stick them in your pantry.
Don't get an electric can opener. Get a manual one, because if you have an electric can opener,
we've actually started doing this. And basically what we do is we buy a couple extra cans, and I have a marker downstairs, and I mark the date on the can with when we buy it. And then when we buy more, we just rotate it. So we go out, we buy a couple cans, go down to the basement, rotate them out. So we're constantly rotating the stock so that the stuff isn't there. But we've got backup, right? You're out of it. Something happens, you've got some extra. That's always a good thing. Learn to grow some food. Doesn't matter where you are. A lot of vegetables you can grow on your porch. You can grow it on a back deck. You don't have to have the biggest space in the world. You can go online on YouTube, because I've checked. There are people that grow almost entire gardens on their rooftops in apartments in cities.
Wow.
Right? The ability to grow food is really only based on your imagination to make it work and the skills to do it.
Right.
You need the dirt, you need the seeds, you need the time to put in to do it. So learn to grow.
And if you've ever been to Walt Disney World, there is an attraction called Living on the Land. And I forget what the term is, but they can actually grow plants. Hydroponically. Hydroponic. So yep. What these things do, they just literally grow in water. They grow, cucumbers and tomatoes and bananas, because a lot of the areas in our world don't have soil. So they have learned how to grow vegetables with water. So if Disney can do it, well, you can learn how to do it too.
Yeah. As a matter of fact, there's an actual YouTuber I used to watch that created his own hydroponic garden of different vegetables using basically PVC piping and distilled water with some nutrients that he was able to buy, chemicals that he was able to buy. So very interesting stuff. Again, takes some time to learn, but learning stretches the brain. And as Marcus said, the more you learn, the more you know, the more you stretch your brain, the better off you're going to be going into your older age anyway.
100%. 100%.
So it kind of all ties in together. Learning how to heat or cool effectively without electricity. This could be a little bit more complicated depending on your area, but again, not a bad skill to have. Mark down there in Houston in the middle of summer trying to figure out how to keep himself cool without air conditioning. That could be a situation. Me up here, my biggest challenge would be trying to keep myself warm in the winter because, you know, during the summer, it's not hot enough for me to really worry about it.
Yeah, I remember a couple years ago we were talking and it was like below zero. So think about it.
Yeah.
It's below zero outside. You lose power, so you can't heat your home. So think about it. Think of the extremes of summer in Houston, winter in Rochester. So it's not like, oh, I don't live in the South, I don't have to worry about it. But what if you live in Edmonton, Canada, and your power goes out and it's 4 degrees outside?
Yep. There's obviously ways that you could do it. There's different ways you could do it. You could find all this information online. There's all kinds of really good sources online to figure some of this stuff out. Learn how to collect things from your environment. I know there's a lot of people that aren't into like herding animals, and I get that, but take up hunting or fishing or learning how to trap just to learn the skill. It's not something you have to do all the time if you're not into it, but just to understand the skill of how to do it so that if you're ever in a situation where you can't get food and you can't get a protein source, like a viable protein source, you at least feel comfortable enough to say, not something I do all the time, but I feel comfortable enough that I could do it if I needed to. Learning the different plants that are around you, what's edible, what's not edible, what could be used for medicinal purposes. There are excellent books on this. I might actually order this weekend. I literally just ran across a book today. It is by a woman. She was actually on a show that I was watching on the Discovery Channel. There's a show on the Discovery Channel called Alone. Mark, I don't know if I talked to you about this show. I've talked to a couple people about this show, but basically they pick 10 people and they drop them off. The show started on Vancouver Island. They drop them off in the middle of Vancouver Island and they say, prepare to be there for a year all by yourself. And they give you a list of things you can take. You get to pick some stuff to take with you, and they drop you off and they say, here's a sat phone. If you call on the sat phone, you're tapping out. The person who lasts the longest wins a whole bunch of money. But the point is one of the people on one of these seasons was this woman who does these medicinal plants. And she's since being on the show, she's compiled a lot of her knowledge into a book. And I watched her through the whole show. So she was like going through all the plants as she was on the show. And she used some of the plants on herself as she was in the show. And I've done a little like research on her on the side. I can't remember her name off the top of my head, but if I get it, I will post it in our WhatsApp group, which we'll tell you about that at the end of the show. But very, very, very intelligent person, knows a lot about plants. So learning plants, learning how to use them effectively. Those are just some of the things. Any kind of survivalist skill or old school skill, anything your grandfather would do in the woods or your grandmother would do in the kitchen is probably a good skill to have.
Hmm. And just a little side note, I try not to take medication. I was texting you not too long ago, and I found out that if you have a headache, not a migraine, but if you have a headache, almonds and apples, they are all natural, and they work. So if you've got a headache, take some almonds. Have an apple, and it's amazing, you know, as Danny and I are both believers, that God created this food that actually takes away headache. I'm not sure about migraines, but I'm a big fan of always turning to see what nature offers before I go, and I'm not big on big pharma. I'm reading a book right now by, I think his name is John Rossler. It's called Pharma. It's all about the corruption of the pharmaceutical industry. Man, the more I read this book, I'm like, I want to stay away from the big pharma because they don't have our best interests in mind.
No.
But that's a subject for another day. So I really hope that you enjoyed this topic. It was really out there, and because we're Danny and I are doing these episodes every week, and you know we're trying to stay within the technology nerdy thing, but we want to do things that make you go, Well, I've never listened to the Two Bald Nerds podcast, but EMPs, I got to check this out. So Danny's going to tell you how you can give us show ideas. It's really easy. It's free. And Danny, how would they do that?
Well, as you said, it's easy and free. You go on over, you download WhatsApp, you sign up, and you look for the Two Bald Nerds. That's the number two, bald, B-A-L-D, and the word nerds, N-E-R-D-Z. You look for that group. You ask to be invited in. Mark or I'll let you in, and you can post comments. You can give us show ideas. You can see what's going on. Right now, there's not much going on because, unfortunately, it's just Mark and I, but we'd love to get more people involved and get people in the group so we can start chatting and shooting ideas and questions back and forth and see what you guys want to hear about.
And we're going to ask you a favor. I've never done this on the show before, but I want to ask you a favor. If you've listened this far, if you would share this episode with at least one other person, just real easy, whatever podcast player you're on, I would recommend Apple Podcasts or Spotify because most people have one of those two on there. And just hit that share button and go to one of your contacts and grab someone who thinks that they would appreciate this episode. Because if you start sharing these episodes with more people, and then they're going to get involved in the WhatsApp group and they're going to start downloading our other episodes because we don't make any money off this. I pay to host this podcast, and so we're not making any money off this. We're just having a couple nerds just having conversations. So, Danny and I can keep coming up with ideas, but we're going to need your help. So help us out, man. Yeah. Really, or woman, or dog, who's ever listening. I really appreciate it. Danny, any final thoughts before we wrap up the show today?
Just when you think about these things, again, you always want to think about being prepared. And the way to shock yourself and to start thinking about being prepared is to think about worst case. Then when you get that, oh gosh, worst case, that's a lot. Then you can ratchet it back and say, okay, now that I'm in the mindset of what would I do? You can start to say, well, worst case is kind of not that likely, but here's a case that is likely. I live in Houston, hurricanes, I could lose power. And you can start to apply it practically. Mm-hmm. Anything you do practically in the small will pay dividends if something larger were to happen, because at least you'd have the knowledge. And I'm a big proponent, and Mark is too, the more you know, the better off you'll be.
I don't know who said this, if it was Gary Vaynerchuk or Tim Ferriss, but if you can come up with the absolute worst scenario that you can imagine about any given situation, and you can accept it and go, okay, this is the worst it can be. The odds of that happening are really small, but if you accept the worst, you're better off than if you say, well, can't get that bad. And all of a sudden, like we had a winter storm here in Houston, Texas in February of 2021, where we had 14 degrees for 3 days. And then 2 days later, it was 75 degrees. But no one ever anticipated that. Yeah. Okay. So figure out wherever you are in the world, what is the absolute worst that can happen? Is it a wildfire? Is it an earthquake? Is it a blizzard? Is it a hurricane, a tornado, whatever it is? And then accept it and go, okay, if that's the worst, probably not going to happen. How can I prepare? The time to do it is now. Like we're recording this on August 17th. And we're about ready to ramp up hurricane season here in Houston. Happens all the time between August and September. That's the peak of hurricane season. So we already been preparing for the last 10 months. You should be. If you live in the Gulf States area, Florida, Alabama, Louisiana, Texas, and you're not prepared, you've lived here for more than 30 minutes, well, you're a moron because it happens. Like up in New York. You may get a bad winter. You may get a good winter. You're going to have wildfires in the West Coast. You're going to have tornadoes. So you know this is going to happen. You know your area. So just be prepared. So I really hope you enjoyed the episode. Danny and I enjoyed talking about it. But Danny, before we let them go, they have one assignment. They always have one assignment. I gave them two this time. Share the episode with at least one person. But what's the other thing they have to do?
Your other assignment is to always stay nerdy.